Griffiths again. He scored again! Sensational! Lightning strikes twice!
Good play by Gemland again.
3-1! James McFadden scores for Scotland! France are stunned and Scotland lead in Paris!
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Pure Football Podcast, unbiased, in-depth Scottish football. What more could you ask for? First of all, for tonight's show though, I want to start with a really quick message to say that with another lockdown pending, a difficult time ahead for all of us, it's important that we all stay safe and support each other as much as we can in these difficult times. Football is an excellent outlet for mental health and is somewhere that you can forget all your problems, at least for a little while. I wanted to give just a really quick mention, and that if you are struggling, then I recommend looking at the Tiny Changes website, www.tinychanges.com. It's a website with lots of resources and tools that can help you if you are struggling mentally. If you feel that you need to speak to someone, then there's a number of different places that you can go to, such as Breathing Space, Samaritans, or Mind. A simple Google search will bring up all the information for you. But of course, we're always here to talk football, and I know that everyone in the Pure Football team has got their DMs open to anyone who wants to talk football. We're always available for that. But again, I think just throughout this pending difficult time at this, you know, special time of year, it's really important that we all do our best to take care of each other. Oh, and saying that, and whilst this is a difficult time for us all, are you able to tell me one positive that's came out for you during lockdown? Whether it's a book, a TV show, more football, if that's possible, food, or maybe something just completely different that you wouldn't have discovered in the, you know, in the current climate.
Yeah, absolutely, Gavin. First of all, how are you? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm really good, Owen. What about you?
Yeah, I'm good. And just to echo what you said, my DMs are always open for anybody. But in terms of something that's positive that's come through lockdown, Ted Lasso, so a TV show on Apple TV. Ted Lasso is a show about an American guy who's an American football coach and then is plucked by an English Premier League club to go and be their football manager. So it's a kind of fish out of water type kind of comedy, kind of quirky, but it's just full of charisma, and it's made by the same people that were at least kind of created by the same person that made Scrubs. Okay. So it's got that kind of you know, happy, kind of positive, joyous kind of side of comedy to it, but it's just really good. Jason Sudeikis is the guy in the lead role, and I think if you maybe think, oh, they're going to kind of maybe get some things wrong about football, or it's going to be kind of cringy or whatever, it's not. You just trust it and go with it. All the football stuff is pretty good, but just the character, the main guy, Ted Lasso, you'll end up falling in love with him. Just, you know, nice. The charisma, the kind of enjoyability, the kind of fish out of water type thing, that he doesn't care, you know, how things should be done in football, and, you know, what the kind of proper way to approach things is. But, it, you know, he just cares about people and stuff. It all kind of works out. And I think it's just a show to kind of get a little bit lost in. If you love football, but you kind of want something a bit positive, that's the one for you during this kind of Christmas season. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really good, mate. And I've not seen it myself, but it sounds like something that's worth checking out. But let's crack on with tonight's show. And, you know, we said that we would cover the Scottish Cup final, which took place at the weekend between Celtic and Hearts, as well as looking at the, I guess, the top of League One as well, with Falkirk taking on Airdrie. And then just finishing up with some stats on some players that we're interested in this season. So, Owen, let's just get straight into it. And as Celtic embarked on their quest for a quadruple treble, something that's completely unheard of, how big an achievement is this? And just give me some of your general thoughts on what Celtic have done in the sort of last 3-4 years.
It's incredible. This will never be repeated in our lifetimes. I think the advantage that Celtic and indeed Rangers have due to their relative size and, you know, the level of support and money they have over the rest of Scotland means in some way title wins and consecutive title wins should be anticipated. But this is crazy. You know, a quadruple treble, it's difficult for me to say, let alone for him, Celtic, to achieve. But I think there's 12 trophies over 4 years. It's just unbelievable. Like, the level, the mentality that you have to deliver that, the level of consistent play, you know, it's just unbelievable. So I think they deserve, you know, despite, or at least being cognizant of the relative advantages that they have, you have to say fair play, respect to that. It's an incredible achievement. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah.
Watch yourself and feel the same?
Yeah, much the same, mate. There's nothing you can really add to that. It's an incredible achievement. And like you said, I don't think it's anything that we'll see again in our lifetime. So, you know,
I hope not. I mean, not to kind of say I don't want that to happen for Celtic specifically, but just, I like the glory to be shared out. That's all when I say that.
Yeah, we're looking for a Leicester. We're looking for St Mirren to win the Scottish Premiership.
Exactly, yeah. Where's the Leicester of the Scottish Premiership? Yeah, but anyway, absolutely incredible. Well done to them. It's just a phenomenal achievement. Unbelievable.
Yeah, let's move on to the game itself then. And obviously we know the outcome, recording on Monday night, Celtic won on penalties. But the lineups for the game, talk me through that. Was there any surprises to you? Scott Brown came back in after missing the previous two. Was there anything else that really stood out to you or anything you were looking out for?
The Celtic defence surprised me. So Connor Hazard starting the final. I mean, obviously he played in previous games for Celtic recently, but I just felt it was a big move to trust somebody fling somebody in. I don't know how you'd approach your kind of view on that, but certainly putting somebody that inexperienced into a final, particularly in a kind of a position like goalkeeper, seemed like quite a significant thing. Mm. And aside from that, the defence as well. So again, I guess the thing that ties in for me with thinking about, well, it's kind of difficult for Hazard to be thrown in, is that Celtic under Lennon are kind of veering between different selections. And again, there was a change up in defence with Taylor coming in at left back, and we presumed from the lineup, and we were right, that Ayer was going to be at right back. And Duffy and Julien as the centre-back pairing, which, you know, I don't know if they've started that four in those roles this season before. That was a bit of a surprise. For Hearts, I was a bit surprised that Adie White starting, particularly at what looked like it would be left midfield. That was kind of curveball, and I think a lot of Hearts fans had been very hopeful that Peter Haring would be fit enough, I guess, to make the starting 11. He wasn't, so that was the other kind of thing that was kind of notable, I guess, for me. What about you? Anything you saw?
Yeah, much the same to yourself. I was particularly interested in, I thought Hearts might have started with Naismith up front rather than Boyce. That was the thing I was potentially looking out for.
Really?
I wasn't sure whether Boyce was going to start this game. I thought they might have been a little bit more conservative, but obviously Peter Haring being out, that obviously played into to maybe that decision making. But I guess sticking with Hearts then, what do you think a way to beat Celtic, or a way to approach a game against Celtic would be, you know, when you're the underdog on this occasion? What do you think you could do to try and get yourself, you know, that result? What would you look to exploit?
Well, it's really difficult, isn't it? I think maybe the first thing that Hearts could have tried to think about doing was to reduce things to quite an attritional game. In the middle of the park, you want to maybe try and bring Celtic, who you probably have to accept on an individual basis are better than you in terms of quality. You want to bring them down to your level. And I don't say that with any disrespect towards Hearts, but you just want to try and make it, you know, more about the physical side of the game, you know, attritional, rather than the kind of quality side. And then beyond that, you want to stay compact, very focused. And again, I think maybe with the next point, there's a little bit of a, well, it's tough, but there's a bit of a kind of contrast between the fact that you don't want to leave space behind the centre-backs, particularly playing, you know, Berra and Halkett, where, you know, Berra in particular is going to be slow on the turn. But also, you don't want, for example, to allow Edouard playing at centre-forward to be able to drop deep and receive it in turn. So that's really difficult, you know, the balance between those two things. But you need to try and get that right. You also maybe want, when you're talking about being in possession, you want to try and tempt McGregor and Brown forward out of position. They've been quite bad this season at being tempted to kind of move away from maybe the area they should really be safeguarding. So if you can kind of try and tease them forward out of position off the ball and get it through to Naismith, and then depending on the fullbacks, you know, you kind of assume probably that Celtic are going to push forward with their fullbacks, and you know there might be some space in behind them. Hearts don't have a lot of pace or kind of creativity in wide areas, but if you can get the ball into those zones, that would be the sort of thing to perhaps do. Yeah. What about you? Anything different to that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that the key thing would be to try and knock Celtic off their stride and make sure it is a physical battle, and you know maybe try and disrupt a few people, maybe try and you know really get in Scott Brown's face early on, maybe same with Shane Duffy. Try and antagonise these types of players and see if you can, you know, get your marginal gain through the mental battle opposed to the capability on the ball. So yeah, that makes sense. But I guess, you know, the game kicked off and the first sort of real chance fell to Hearts with a set piece, which was something of a theme in this game. First of all, I thought, you know, the chance that came from Christophe Berra, I don't know if you remember it early on, but it felt to me that Hazard just made a bit of a mess of this. I just think, and we'll get to it throughout the game, but he looks a little bit awkward for a goalkeeper, I think, especially this chance. I just thought he didn't like diving down low. I don't know if you felt that.
This is a weird one, right? Because it was a bit of an over-exaggerated flop onto the ball. And I guess what I would say is normally I don't really care about these things, right? It's a chance from miles out in relative terms, you know, from a set piece, it's very low probability of scoring. And it was probably going wide or whatever. I'd probably only normally care about a chance of this sort if there was a possibility of it being a goal or if it's indicative of some sort of flaw in the keeper. And it's kind of interesting the way that Hazard approached this. Like, it just, I don't know, looking at it, you're like, is he quite slow? Is he not that mobile? Was he suffering in terms of confidence and was hesitant? And I don't know then whether you're kind of, are we looking back with hindsight at that chance and adding more into it than what it really tells us? But it's an interesting one to think about, right? It certainly doesn't look good looking back at it and being like, well, if you're a keeper, what's the optimal way to deal with this? I mean, it's the sort of thing that a top level keeper probably doesn't even pick that up. Yep. He's probably over there and controls him with his feet and then knocks out to a fullback with no kind of thought at all, right? It was absolutely nothing. So it's just interesting that took a weird kind of flop on the ball when it was going out. So yeah, it's a notable one, I think, just because of what we then see later, particularly at set pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I guess that early scare for Celtic, it didn't really come to anything else for Hearts for a bit of a while. And then, you know, we've seen Ryan Christie, there's quite a lot of action to get through then to move on. Ryan Christie opens the scoring with, I guess, which is an excellent strike. But what I want you to talk me through on is not just the goal itself, but a little bit around about your thoughts on Ryan Christie and his decision-making when it comes to shooting from sort of lower XG sort of areas. What do you think of that?
Well, it's hard to analyse this properly, I think. I mean, people who are listening probably know that I've done an article on a Pure Football website, looking at long shots and Ryan Christie, and there's some other really good articles out there, and there's obviously a lot of debate to be had between, you know, people maybe who would be saying, try and take the high percentage shots, and then other people who would be saying, you know, just shoot when you can, and people that would be maybe the sensible people that would be saying there's nuance to this, there's, you know, a lot more to it. In terms of Christie, I think he can be frustrating at times. That's absolutely the truth. That there are times when he shoots or wastes the ball when he shouldn't, but there are other times when it's obviously a huge advantage to have him in the team because he will strike and score for you. This is a good example of the little bits of difference that there can be in terms of what's considered a type of long shot and why, you know, certain XG models are maybe not built well enough, you know, because they don't necessarily take into account all the little bits of detail, or they just can't at this stage, you know, the model's not capable of really telling you enough about what's going on. In terms of this situation, right, there's a bit of a lucky break of the ball, or unlucky from Hart's perspective. there's an incredible first touch from Ryan Christie that kind of gets out of his feet. And then there's a lot of separation between him and the defenders. You could maybe say that the Hearts defenders should be closer to him. I certainly think that the centre-back should shift over a little bit in a scenario like this. I mean, prior to him actually getting the shot, they're too far to the right. It's going to be... It's always going to be too difficult for somebody to get close to Christie if either he or Edward gets away from the marker in this situation. You shouldn't be in a scenario where those two guys are essentially in the box, and if they do one thing right or one thing comes off, they're free. You you can't allow that as a possibility. But it was unlucky for Hearts, but you need to, I don't know, you need to manage for having bad luck counting against you, right? That's part of doing football. Particularly when you're facing somebody like Christie who can score into the top corner from 23 yards out.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, if you had Graham Spears in goal, he would have saved it. So anyway, it was a brilliant goal, and fair play to Ryan Christie, proving all his XG haters wrong. Sensational strike, absolutely beautiful, and a brilliant.
Yeah, I think with Ryan Christie, you'd
open the score in a cup final, right? You know.
Yeah, I think with Ryan Christie, you don't want to tell him to stop shooting. I think it probably impacts his game too much by trying to take that out of him. I think it's just a very instinctive type decision he makes, and those instinctive decisions can obviously pay off for you at times. Other times they won't, and I think you've just got to accept that's part of his game. But Celtic then made it 2-0 with a penalty from Edwards, which you know, absolutely killed Neil McCann. And with Edward, as cool as you like. I was thinking a lot about this. A lot of people have been saying that you know, it's cheeky, it's, you know, this sort of thing. I think that's a really terrible way to describe it. It is an unbelievable level of composure that is required to have the balls to do that in a cup final, regardless of the level. So I'm gonna say it's an excellent finish from Edward.
The main thing that stuck out to me in the response to, particularly the response from McCann, was, can you just imagine having somebody like Neil McCann being your manager? I mean, if that's how he feels genuinely, I don't know if he does. You know, maybe people are sometimes just put on the spot as, you know, pundits or whatever, and have to say something in response. They're like, well, you know, what can I say? I'll say this. They might not really mean it, or it might not be what they would really say if they were, you know, genuinely asked. But if you had McCann as your manager and you're like a forward and that's his view on you doing a Panenka, you probably think, well, what's his view going to be on me taking a very risky pass or dribbling and stuff? You just think, I don't know, it's just disappointing to have somebody that's potentially going to be that adverse to you enjoying life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, it's all you can say is it's top class from Watson Edwards, and that's what we want to see. Edward then nearly made it 3-0 just before half time, with which to me looked like some really lazy defending from Hearts. It was a decent enough save from Craig Gordon. I think Edward probably could have done a little bit better, actually. Could have showed some of that composure or cheekiness, you know, for this chance which Gordon saved. But it felt to me like Berra and Halkett were just all over the place. And I think we've seen this story before, right? Where Christoph Berra and Craig Halkett together is just a recipe for disaster. We've seen it under Craig Levein. We've seen it under Daniel Stendel. Surely that's something that Hearts have got to address.
I guess that's fair. It's interesting that we're here, you know, a long time, I guess, in football, in terms after Stendel basically decided that Berra wasn't at the level needed anymore and tried to move on from. But now he's here starting in a cup final. I mean, weird circumstances can make these things happen. You know, a cup final that's really from last season happening now, injuries and stuff. You know, Berra's kind of, you would accept, fine probably as a third or fourth choice in the championship. But this kind of just shows you what those kind of types of decisions can lead to. You know, if Hearts had stuck with it, and, you know, you would have to imagine that probably, as much as there may be intangible things that having Berra back in can do for you, if they had thought, well, okay, let's actually move on, let's get in. There are a multitude of young, good centre-backs that they could have had as potentially a third or fourth choice that would have joined in the championship, and then would probably have been at a level better. I don't know. It just shows you that you can talk all you want about the benefits of having somebody in for their experience and their kind of connection to the club and stuff and all those sort of intangible things. But there's a reason one lot of things are called intangibles and another lot are called tangibles. And we saw the benefit of the tangible stuff in this final because Berra had a very bad game, I would say.
Yeah, I would totally echo that. And I guess Hearts were lucky not to go down 3-0 at half time, and then obviously, you know, in the dressing room at half time, Robbie Nielsen must have played Song 2 by Blur to get the boys going. And just after half time, Hearts made it 2-1 with a goal from Liam Boyce. Talk me through this goal. What did you see here? And is it just me, or is Shane Duffy a little bit all over the place here? Just felt like there was maybe the sort of communication in between Julian and Duffy. Both of them, it just looks like their eyes are on the ball. There's not one bit where, you know, they do the sort of sense check of what's around about them, where Boyce is. And also, am I maybe being harsh on Hazard again here? He just seems to be very awkward diving for this. Yeah, it just felt a little bit calamitous from Celtic's point of view to allow Hearts back into the game.
Oh, well, I'm glad there's an opportunity for the blame the goalkeeper game to swing back to its natural kind of stance here, because there's nothing that Hazard can do about this goal. This is not Conor Hazard's fault, I would say, with this goal. I knew you were going to go that way, though. But in terms of this goal, I would say that the funniest part about this goal is AD White, of all people, chipping over Chris Iyer's head on the dribble on the left-hand side to start the chance. But yeah, in terms of the goal itself, I'm just flabbergasted about Shane Duffy, really. I continue to be. I know there was this kind of miniature kind of redemption for him recently, but we can accept that this guy is not capable of being some sort of playmaker from the back, but we were all sold on the idea that he would be a adept, high-quality penalty box defender. And, you know, for this goal, for example, and, you know, it's never necessarily fair just to stick on one goal and, you know, discuss through the failings of one person on it. But again, yet again, Shane Duffy, unaware of where the key threat is, doesn't defend a ball into the box, is supposed to be, or has shown that he can be good in the air. But, yeah. Very, very bad. Very, very poor penalty box defending by him. I would put the blame on him. And obviously, also, Iyer doesn't do well. But I think there should be more support for Iyer on the flank there, you know, when he's having a tough time of it. But a bad, bad goal for Celtic to concede.
Yeah, I totally agree. Shane Duffy's not covering himself in any sort of glory here. And Hearts then went on to make it, you know, 2-2, and the fight back was well and truly, you know, on. And it was a goal from a corner. Been watching a lot of corners recently, and I like the way that Hearts really sort of flooded the 6-yard box to sort of stop any sort of clear connection from Hazard. But Hazard, I felt like this one, maybe it's just after watching the game, but I felt like he covered himself in absolutely no glory in his attempt to win this ball. And whilst it wasn't easy, I just don't think he looks comfortable as a goalkeeper. What did you think of this one, Owen?
Yeah, this is terrible from Hazard. I really love your corner analysis, Gavin, so I'd be interested in hearing your further thoughts. But I think that Hazard thinks that Odson Edouard is going to try and head this away at the near post. But then if I was putting somebody at a near post as a team, it wouldn't be Odson Edouard. I want somebody, like, if we're going to play a man-marking system, but I have somebody at the near post that's zonal and is there to kind of win that first ball, I want somebody that's pretty good in the air. Often teams put a centre-forward there, maybe because it's a bit of an afterthought. With some centre-forwards, it's obviously fine. It's a very different game to put, Oliver Giroud or Robert Lewandowski as your man there on the corner of the 6-yard box. Edward's not a sort of guy that's going to go and win the first ball in the air like that, you know?
Yeah.
So, number one, I wouldn't have him there. I would have somebody else there. Maybe Celtic just don't have enough people that are kind of dominant and aggressive in that way. But then Hazard should just go through Edward. That's my thinking on it. Yeah. You know, as a goalkeeper, you've got to be ready for your players not to do the things that you expect them to do, right? So you've got to be thinking, Edward's probably not going to get that. Edward's probably not going to get that. I need to be ready for him not to. But also, you need to preempt that by just being like, I'll go through him and claim it. So, yeah, it was disastrous. Bad personnel in the wrong spots, which is part of your plan, and then individual errors. So, very bad goal to concede.
Yeah,
but well done by my Hearts. You know, they did well to be alive to the second and third ball and convert it. And surprisingly enough, Josh Cinelli, despite his ineptitude with other types of chances in this game, was able to smash this in from half a yard out. Yeah.
Yeah, did you think, and this might just be me being overly critical here, but Chris Iyer, I didn't think that he covered himself in glory on this either. I think he looks at Cinelli and then doesn't do anything about the ball that's going to Cinelli, doesn't try and get in front of him. I know it happens fast, but I just feel like for someone of Iyer's level, this was a mental lapse in concentration in the game that was probably avoidable.
I think you're fucked by that point. I think, like, to say that it's a mental lapse of concentration, that's like a millisecond by the time it gets to that point. Once you're past the first ball or the second ball, I think all bets are off in terms of trying to expect people to do things, and it's largely luck at that stage. That would be my view. You need to not let it get to that point by Edward winning the header when it comes in, or Hazard clearing him out of the way and saving it, or whoever it is at the back post happening to kind of luckily win it. But once it gets beyond that, it's just a lottery, I would say.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. There was some more calamitous defending from Celtic as Christopher Julien and Shane Duffy tangled each other up, and Josh Cinelli then given an incredible chance to try and put Hearts in front. Personally, I feel like he's got to do a lot better here. This is probably as good a chance as you're going to get in open play against Celtic. But that defensive weakness is absolutely still there for Celtic, right? Regardless of how this game finished. But talk me through, first of all, Cinelli, and then the overall Celtic defence.
I think this chance was before the corner equaliser.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. You're right. This one,
it was a bad error. And I don't know, I kind of feel like you, as much as Julien and Iyer haven't been perfect as a duo, I still don't feel that you would get that from them the same way that you would with this kind of thing from Julien and Duffy. But maybe that kind of indecision, that lack of like one person deciding, I'm going to be just a leader and just deal with this, maybe that comes from there being so many changes for them as a team, particularly in defence, people being shuffled about. Cinelli, I thought he was unlucky. You know, it's the type of chance where you get through, but you kind of, you're getting through and you still always kind of feel in your back of the mind, oh, maybe I'm going to get closed down. But yeah, he was not great with those opportunities. He had a series of them, and the finish and the composure, the kind of just the feeling that he would be deadly, it wasn't there. But yeah, you know, Celtic feel susceptible, and it's not just about the defensive pairing, the individuals. It's about the chopping and changing of systems and personnel and the people in front of them. You know, Brown, McGregor being pulled away from their zone and stuff like that, you know. So not ideal, and certainly the fact that we were about to see them being pulled back to two each, it wasn't entirely a surprise. You know, the game was a little bit back and forth at that stage, I felt, despite their control in the first half.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Then it's not the first time that we've seen Celtic allow these sort of comebacks to happen against them. I think, you know, obviously the quality of opposition is far superior, but it happened against AC Milan, Lille. There just seems to have these issues and not knowing how to see a game out, which is definitely something you don't want when you're, you know, trying to stop Rangers from winning the title this year. So the 90 minutes finished, and obviously there's been lots that has happened this game, so there's still a bit to get through. The 90 minutes finishes, and let's just move on to the goals. And Celtic take the lead through Lee Griffiths in extra time. Christoph Berra loses Scott Brown in the box. Shock. The recipe for disaster that we spoke about earlier was well and truly in the oven baking, as Christoph Berra just watches Scott Brown, you know, go up and win the sort of header, sort of takes a deflection and breaks to Lee Griffiths, who sort of swivels and puts it into the top of the net. How disappointed are you if you're Robbie Nielsen and you lose this goal?
Gutted, and that's compounded with the way that Scott Brown kind of lords it over Naismith in particular after scoring. It was a difficult goal to lose. I think that actually Berra is picking up Ayer from this corner, and it's Kingsley that's supposed to be on Brown. Anyway, it's not great at all. Aside from the marking, which they get done by a fairly straightforward kind of, I don't know, double dummy kind of run where Brown and Ayer kind of trick Berra and Kingsley. Also, Julien makes a good front post run that kind of leaves a big kind of hole. The main thing I would want to pinpoint on this, apart, you know, obviously the aggression, the mentality from Brown and the awareness from Griffiths is good. It's the delivery from Christie, and I think that often he gets criticised for his corners and his kind of execution of those, and maybe we don't highlight enough when there is a great delivery. So it was a brilliant cross. You couldn't ask for that to go into a better zone, given what they wanted to do. So that would be the one thing I would want to highlight from that. But yes, if it was Hearts, you know, given how well, how resilient they'd been to get back to two each, to lose a goal from a set piece in that way, very disappointed. Yeah.
Thankfully for Hearts, Connor Hazard was being a hazard in goal, and he allowed Hearts to come back into it again. Talk me through the goal that makes it three each from Josh Cuccinelli.
Yeah, so it's another set piece, and I felt that Christie gave it away a bit needlessly, and the ball is just, it's delivered into a really good area. Again, it's a beautiful ball in by Ollie Lee. I think Ayer gets a wee push in the back from Herring, which kind of puts him off for the second ball. But again, yeah, your man Hazard is Hazard, has to come for it better. He needs to go through everybody. Not like the so if you watched Ryan Gold's game for French against Sporting Club, the Portugal at the weekend, you would have seen that the French goalkeeper cost them the game by kind of coming out for a cross and punching basically a guy going for the ball. Not like that exactly, but still, at least, you know, come through everybody, you've got to commit and go and win it. At that point, it was very weak, but well done by Hearts. Again, just kind of showing the ball into the right area will do damage against Celtic, you know.
So Owen, we have to keep this ball rolling as we go into penalties. What was your thoughts here around about Celtic and Hearts? Did you have any concerns about Celtic's mental state going into the high-pressured penalty kicks? Were Hearts going to be able to get it over the line? What was your just sort of overarching thoughts going into the penalties themselves?
I didn't know what to think at all. I always find it very difficult to decide about penalties. I think that kind of assessments of what a player is really feeling or what a team's mentality is like is too kind of difficult to make. And yeah, I wasn't too sure at all what would happen. What about you?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say, right? But I just felt like this was a prime opportunity for Hearts. I thought, you know, if Celtic's mental resilience was ever going to be tested, it was the way that this game has panned out, with some pretty poor defending, you know, extra time, losing the goals late on, these sort of things. I thought from a Hearts perspective, this was your chance. Yep. If you were going to see Celtic crumble under pressure, this was going to be the moment. But obviously it wasn't, and Celtic were able to you know, win the cup through the penalty shootout. But let's just quickly talk about the penalties at a sort of at a high level, not going through all of them, but to me it felt like all of them were, you know, as long as the keeper goes the right way, he was saving them. I thought they were pretty poor penalties, all the ones that were missed. I think Craig Gordon probably does the best with the Ryan Christie one, but it's a good height for him, I think, when he goes that way. He doesn't have to really extend his arms up. And the ones that Conor Hazard saves, I thought that any keeper that dives the right way would be very disappointed if they don't save those ones. Am I being too critical here?
Nah, I don't think so. I think that's kind of fair. I had a kind of wee thought about this. So I agree with you entirely. The penalties that aren't scored in this, they're not good. They're not particularly down to goalkeeper heroics. And that kind of, again, made me think about the fact that penalties bore me. You should score a penalty. I've thought before about ways to try and make penalties harder to score. like, you know, various things that you could do to try and move it to more of like a 50-50 kind of, or even a 0.50 XG chance to score instead of a, well, whatever a penalty is, I think it's 0.76 XG. But I don't know about that, because you want a penalty in some circumstances to be a punishment. You know, a handball on the line should definitely be punished with a high percentage chance to score, but in a penalty shootout, I know for the drama and the headlines, it's quite nice to have like one winning save or one poor guy who misses to lose. But I think I would actually like penalties to be more of a kind of lottery, which, you know, penalties aren't, despite what commentators say. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Gavin, that the penalties that are missed here are penalties that deserve to miss rather than being particularly good saves. The only other kind of thought I have about the penalties is that I was quite impressed by Christopher Ayer's winner. The thing I think about penalties of that sort is when you're in the position where you know that the penalty you're going to take is potentially the winner, always put it down the middle, because the goalkeeper is under such pressure to make a save. He wouldn't want to be seen to be waiting, standing in the middle and not diving, you know, which is really a smart choice often with penalties, to stand in the middle and just, you know, hope that the guy blasts it down the line. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to look stupid, right? Particularly if it's the last deciding penalty. So I think often goalkeepers will dive in that circumstance. So I would stick it down the middle. So respect to Ayer for having the kind of mentality to do that, I thought. But the bad penalties were saved. Absolutely. Yep.
Was that just a penalty kick life hack that you just gave there, Owen?
That's my advice. If you're in the very, very rare circumstance that you find yourself taking a deciding penalty in a shootout, head it down the middle, absolutely. But if it goes wrong, don't come back to me about it. It's just advice. It's not a must do.
I love it. So overall, this was a historic achievement for Celtic, right? 12 domestic trophies in a row. There's nothing that can take away from that. But there are a few takeaways on Celtic's performance as a team. And I'm just going to quickly chuck my thoughts out there, and if you can come back in with any retort or anything you want to add. One, for me, Celtic are still weak defensively and can be exposed by teams that have got the better players that can potentially punish the mistakes that Celtic are making in the back. Despite Conor Hazard's goalkeeping heroics, Celtic still haven't got a clear first-choice goalkeeper. Hearts are likely to win promotion, but desperately need to sort out the centre-back situation before coming into the top flight. Anything you'd like to add to any of those points, Owen?
I think those are all good points. I agree entirely. Celtic have been exposed by better teams and they've given up chances to teams that are not as good as them. I think you could even see this in this game. I mean, statistically, this match, the non-penalty expected goals before extra time were 1.21 for Celtic versus 0.94 for Hearts. So not that different, you know, 11 shots to 8 shots. And that's despite the fact that Celtic controlled the first half entirely. You know, they're still struggling to make a lot of really good clear chances. And they're still, as you point to, you know, capable of giving up chances defensively. I think this game was quite a good microcosm of many of the issues that Lennon has had. You know, this kind of veering between systems, you know, who to play in defence. Do you trust Frimpong as a right back? Should you or shouldn't you start Scott Brown? What do you do up front? Do you just have Edouard? Does he need, you know, somebody else alongside him? All these kind of things. So yeah, loads of issues. In terms of the goalkeeper, yeah, absolutely. The goalkeeper situation is just bizarre to me, and again feeds back into the disconnect that there clearly is between manager, recruitment department, and, you know, the person with the purse strings. You know, are we going to see this result in them like doing something weird, like I don't know, buying in some relatively reliable Scottish Premiership goalkeeper like Seagreese from Dundee United in January, and then having four goalkeepers who are all really much of a muchness and none of them really that great? I don't know. In terms of Hearts, and I think Hearts are definitely going to win promotion. Centre-back situation is strange, right? Because it's affected by the fact that Suter has been injured, and the fact that, you know, you might say that Berra is a decent, as we said earlier, person to have around the club as a third or fourth choice. I would say that if you went into the Premiership with a centre-back three of Suter, Halkett and Popescu as a non-Old Firm club. That's a pretty good centre-back setup with the right setup and system and right coaching. You maybe add in a fourth person, a young player. So I'm not as down on it as you are. I don't think, as long as you can get rid of Berra and you can get Suter back. You know, that's my thoughts. But good points there, Gavin. I like those.
Okay. So that rounds up our bumper coverage of the Scottish Cup final. And we'd definitely like to hear your thoughts on some of those opinions there. And let's move on, though, to domestic action and League One. Wait, let me do that again. Sorry, mate. So let's move on then and drop down to League One, where on Sunday we've seen top of the table Falkirk take on Airdrieonians. I think this is the first time that we've covered Falkirk on the main pod this season. Falkirk were on an unbeaten run so far, you know, not lost a league game since the season kicked off again, but they've also won 8 of their last 9 home games. Airdrie were going to be a difficult opponent. We covered Airdrie earlier in the season against Cove, and there was definitely some tactical deficiencies that we sort of spotted, but there was also some interesting players. Who were you looking forward to seeing again going into this game, Owen, and any thoughts on Falkirk?
Yeah, well, I was looking forward to seeing Callum Morrison at Falkirk and also Morgara Gomez, given my long love affair with Senegalese midfielders. At Airdrie, I was excited to see Kyle Connell and Thomas Robert. In terms of Falkirk generally, well, first of all, fair play to them for the fact that I rushed home on Saturday from a nice wee day out to get back and watch the game and buy my stream at like 2:25 with it starting at 3, only to discover after having bought the stream that it was actually going to be postponed till Sunday morning at midday, which was just fucking great. So thanks for really advertising that properly on your Twitter stream. But anyway, yeah, I was excited to see this. Falkirk are obviously well ahead in the league and have been really, really good. There are some good matches coming up. So Falkirk host Thistle on Boxing Day in their next game, and Airdrie away at Clyde, who I think Clyde might be potentially heading towards a little bit of a kind of run up the table. So this is an exciting, good day game. What about you, anybody or anything you were particularly excited about seeing?
Yeah, there was a couple of Airdrie players that I was looking forward to, Kyle Connell being one of them, but also Kieran McDonald, Josh Kerr. I think those two players are really exciting prospects, and I think there's not a huge gap between League Two and the Championship, as we've said before, and I think a couple of these Airdrie players could be some really nice additions for any sort of smart Scottish Championship, maybe even potentially a lower Premiership team. So yeah, let's move on then to the game itself. And there was some early dominance from Falkirk, and I think there was 3 or 4 sort of half chances between Anton Dowds, Charlie Telfer. But before we've seen the sort of best chance at the opening moments where Connor Salmon goes past Callum Fordyce, whips in the sort of low drive ball, which Aidan Connolly probably should have done a little bit better with. What was your thoughts on the opening exchanges, Owen? And were you worried that from watching this that this was going to be a bit of a rout for Falkirk?
I think the early exchanges were a little bit more even than maybe what some of the highlights might have indicated. But Falkirk certainly did start to dominate things. And this particular chance, it was a real pity for them. Connolly was completely caught unawares by the cross and it just kind of bounced harmlessly off him. But there were some signs that of the two teams, Falkirk were starting to make the better chances. Did you feel the same? Did you see any further chances coming?
Yeah, I was worried about how Airdrie were coping with Connor Salmon. I thought he was a sort of real handful for the Airdrie centre-backs. I think he made a lot of smart runs in between the pair, and they didn't know who was to go with. So I thought that was some really intelligent play from him. And he actually sort of nearly broke the deadlock with another really good chance. What was your thoughts on his sort of influence in the game? And Connor Salmon's a bit of a comical figure to some in Scottish football, but to me it looked like that was the Connor Salmon that teams paid. I think someone, I can't remember who it was now off the top of my head, but someone paid, I'm sure it was £1 million for him. I'm going to have to Google this whilst we're on air. But yeah, I'm sure Connor Salmon looked like...
We're just never going to get past the Pizza Express photo outside Firhill, are we? for his man of the match or whatever it was award when he looked really, really unsatisfied at the toppings or whatever on his pizza. But anyway, yeah, he was incredibly unlucky not to score in that particular chance that we saw come from him, where there was good movement between the centre backs and his shot was cleared off the line. He's too good for this level, really, yeah. At least in physical terms. You know, he's so strong, such a big guy, and relatively mobile, I guess. I think that if you're Airdrie, you know, you really maybe needed to play a little bit higher up against him. I felt that from an early stage on, Airdrie were choosing to defend their box, you know, and being too deep, and also were... They looked scared physically from him, particularly on the left side of their defence. They looked like they knew that he had the beating of them if they matched up in a physical battle. And that, you know, if you show that means you're already losing, right? You know, so that was a big issue for him, for them. And I think he kind of realised that. So yeah, that was a mismatch, I would say there. Yeah.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I just went back and quickly checked. So yeah, Wigan paid $600K for Connor Salmon, and then Derby paid $1.2 million for him. So clearly a talented footballer, despite some of the comical images that are going about. And you're right, I think he was a real threat throughout this game, and Airdrie definitely had some issues trying to deal with him. I guess you sort of spoke there about some of the things that Airdrie could have done to try and nullify Connor Salmon's threat. Going into half time, it was 0-0. What do you think Ian Murray, if you were Ian Murray, what would you want to do, or what do you think he said to sort of try and change the game?
I think the main things he would be concerned about were they were very bad at defending balls into the box and also their individual battles defensively. So I think you would want to be higher up. You know, I don't think that necessarily. There were a couple instances where Salmon did well with running him behind, but he's not really, you know, he's not there for his pace. So I think if Airdrie had maybe gone a bit higher up, also they needed to be better at blocking crosses, and there needed to be more aggression from the defence and challenges. You know, as I said, they looked scared of Salmon. There needed to be somebody who was willing to put, you know, literally almost a glove on him. And I think that would have helped them in terms of nullifying that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's some really good points there, Owen. And again, so going into the second half, we've seen a little bit of the same, really. We've seen a lot of sort of half chances for Falkirk. But then I thought Airdrie had their best sort of chance from a counter-attack that broke to Dale Carrick. Do you remember that chance? And if you
yeah, do, I do.
Yeah, just want to talk me through what happened here. And do you think that Dale Carrick potentially should have scored?
Yeah, it's actually funny because Carrick had a really similar chance against Cove Rangers a few weeks ago. That sort of kind of inviting half volley on his right foot at a kind of angle on the right-hand side of the box. And the game against Cove Rangers, it was a really good hit, but similarly, it was kind of one of those good hits where you still expect the goalkeeper to save it. And it was the same in this one against Falkirk, where he's connected in a way that looks good, but it's quite central, it's quite high, it's probably like all that can happen here really is that the goalkeeper saves it. I think he needs to do a lot better. I was thinking there that it's like the sort of chance that feels nice to hit. If you can imagine it in your mind, those ones where you run onto them, the half volley, that's just a lovely thing to hit. But you need to do more than just connect nicely and get it on goal. It needs to be a little bit of like, how is it that I make this as tough as it can be for the goalkeeper here?
Yeah,
I don't feel he did that. I think he was just thinking, get on target, which is a fine idea, but yeah, not good enough for me. No.
Yeah, I agree. And I did think the same when watching it. I was like, I've seen this chance before. And whilst I think your analysis, that's pretty spot on. I think he's absolutely connected well with it, but he's just not going to make the keeper think differently.
And it's kind of nice, like seeing that you've seen that chance for that guy before is good if that's a 5-yard out tapping. But if the type of chances you're getting that are, you know, happening over and over again for him are chances that are from the edge of the box on a half volley, those are low probability chances anyway. So if those are the type of chances that you're going to get made for you through the type of play that you make, you're going to have to get better at scoring them, right? because, you know, those are not the type of chances that go in that often.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think as the game continued, I felt like it was sort of a bit of a boxing match almost, with the sort of two teams sort of just jabbing each other. No one really, you know, swinging to take that, you know, knockdown hit or whatever. But eventually we seen, you know, the opening goal of the game, or the only goal of the game, I should say. And Kilmarnock Looney, Kyle Connell, breaking the deadlock. Talk me through the goal itself, Owen, and then also just a little bit of your thoughts around about Connell so far, considering we've watched the area a couple of times.
Yeah, so this is a long free kick into the box, and it's won initially really well by Adrie, but the second ball, the man marking is not good, and it's not back down, and Connell sends it home with a tap-in. I think this is very poor defence of the box by Falkirk. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here, but there's a lot of issues in terms of their kind of response and awareness of the second ball. But the key thing for me is the setup. I think you have to accept that sometimes things can go wrong once you've already conceded the ball in your box and there's a second ball. But you need to set up well. You need to be early and aware and marking properly. And if you look at this right from when it's actually hit, and the free kick itself is, you know, 40, 45 yards out, it's the looseness of the man marking on the other, the side of the box that the ball's not going into, that is really bad for me. And that just speaks to awareness, you know, knowing what your role is, and just you know, wanting to do the simple basics. So that was really disappointing. In terms of Kyle Connell, so it's a tap-in. You know, this goal is nothing about him really, apart from just kind of awareness to be there. But I was really pleased for him that he got the goal. So Kyle was a 19-year-old. He turned 19 2 days ago. He's a centre-forward on loan from Kilmarnock at Airdrie. And I've been really impressed with what I've seen from him this season so far from Airdrie. He's quite a kind of stocky, well-built centre-forward, but he's really mobile and quite good in the ball as well. Like, his link-up play is good. I know that Kilmarnock fans were impressed by him in their kind of brief introduction to him last season in a cup game, and I know that they're pretty frustrated at the moment with their team and the kind of what they're getting from Kabamba and Brophy up front. So I think some of them might, you know, kind of wish that maybe Connell was still around the place. I don't know if he's at a level to, you know, be contributing in the Premiership, but certainly I'm very pleased for him that he's getting an opportunity. It's, you know, good that he's gone out there and he's starting to make his kind of his name at Airdrie. So well played to him. I think he's got the sort of attributes, the blend of physical you know, attributes and technical quality that will mean that if he gets a run of games for Airdrie, he'll do well. The previous game I watched against Cove, he came on at half time. It was instant, the change that he made for them in terms of giving them an outlet up front, somebody that could hold up the ball, that would make smart runs and stuff. Those little things, you know, it's not all about just scoring the goals at that level. It's about how you can change how your team can play and get the ball up the field and give them an outlet and change things. So, yeah, I'm excited to see more of him through the second half of the season. I think he's a really nice player.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Kyle Connell. Someone I think the sort of first point you mentioned is his sort of frame and size is something that I think gives him a really good opportunity to be successful in the Scottish Premiership. Yep. I think he's probably one more loan away from being a starter or being in the sort of first team squad for Kilmarnock. But yep. I really like the way that he's looking. Real positive trajectory for me. And I think yep. someone to definitely keep an eye on over the next sort of 18 months. And similar to like what we said about, you know, guys like Dylan Tate and Kieran Bowie, I think, not saying Connell will have the same sort of impact, but just someone to keep an eye on to see how their progress goes, especially for the remainder of the season with Airdrie. So it finished 1-0 to Airdrie, and a game that I guess Falkirk will be a little bit frustrated that they've lost. Do you think, first of all, two questions, do you think Falkirk have got the quality in the squad to bounce back from this? And do Airdrie have a realistic hope of pushing for promotion?
Well, in terms of Falkirk, right, so I said that all the top teams in the division, so that's Rangers, Hearts, Falkirk and Queen's Park are going to win their divisions a couple of weeks ago. So I'm going to have to stick with that, I guess. I do genuinely think that Falkirk are better than the other teams in the division, and they will. This is a bad loss for them, but they dominated. I think they'll go away and think about how you maybe make better chances in a match like this. But they should still do it. In terms of Airdrie, this league is so exciting.
Yep.
League One is great. I think not just in terms of the competitiveness, but the quality.
Yep.
You know, like you touched on, there's loads of players who could be players for the bottom six of the Scottish Premiership. There's loads of managers who potentially could be managers at that level. There's loads of good coaching and you know moments and games and stuff. So I think that it's wide open in terms of who makes the playoffs, basically. So yes, Airdrie could potentially make the playoffs. I think there's lots of issues with their team, but there's lots of really good things as well. So I'm excited to watch them. And yeah, they'll be, I think they'll be at the lower tip of trying to make the playoffs, but there's no reason that they can't. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that just to echo your thoughts on League One, there's only sort of 4 points between the fourth place Airdrie and ninth Clyde. Every one of these teams can, you know, give any of the teams a game on their day, and it's definitely an exciting league just now, and some really exciting games coming up. And I think, you know, you mentioned that their Falkirk Partick Thistle on Boxing Day will be, you know, an excellent game. And you know, you've got, I think when you just look through it all, you've got, you know, Clyde Airdrie. Clyde got a good win at the weekend. Airdrie, you know, bouncing off that win there. So I think it's a wide open league, and that playoff place is just there for the team that can be the most consistent. And I think you mentioned earlier in the season that draws are probably a hindrance or a potential hindrance.
So maybe just that was what I was about to say there as well. Yeah, absolutely, Gavin. It's a short season, right? So it's 27 games each. So getting those points on the board, the value of being the team that goes for it and gets a win rather than a draw. That's I think particularly once we get to like February, March, we're going to start feeling that, and teams will start thinking about that more, and it'll be more of a topic in the media. But it's a huge thing to think about. If you had to pick out, do you think there's a team that maybe that will be a good or bad thing for?
As in having to go for it?
Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, I think Montrose are really well suited. I think they've got the quality in their squad. They're obviously currently second in the league. I do worry a little bit about Airdrie in terms of creating good sort of chances. I think that's something that might hinder them. And I do think they do have some frailties in the squad, even so they have. I think when I look through the squads of the sort of League One just now, there's probably the most players in Airdrie that interest me, but they probably don't click as a team. So it's definitely going to be an interesting one. And, you know, East Fife, Clyde, either one of these going to run, and they've got a chance. So it'll just come down to who's got the depth and the quality to be able to make the most of it. And definitely a lot of interest in managers as well. I think I can't really praise League One highly enough. Whilst Falkirk are running away, there's definitely a lot to be said about the standard of League One this year.
I agree with that, absolutely. Yep, Montrose only one draw so far out of, what, 9 matches that they've played, which is the least in the division. So I completely agree with you, Gavin. That is something to look out for. And yeah, the quality of the managers and coaching and playing is definitely something to be enjoyed. Right, let's move on. What are we looking at next?
Yeah, so this has definitely been a bumper episode, and we're going to keep that going. And we've got
the Christmas special, right?
Yeah, that's it. As we prepare for another lockdown, sorry to bring it up again, here's all the Scottish football content that you could possibly ever need. But yeah, so we said that we would look at some of the midfielders in particular that were really interesting us, and we said that we would try and move away from, you know, the sort of obvious choices and look at some different names and a particular focus on maybe some of the smaller clubs or clubs that maybe aren't performing as well. So there's nobody here from Rangers or Celtic that will be discussed, but these are the midfielders that are adding value to their team and just some of the stats that maybe interest us about them. So what I'm going to get us started here, and I want you to talk to us about Gary Dicker and why he's important to Kilmarnock.
Yeah, so the I guess the first thing that sticks out about why Gary Dicker is important is that Kilmarnock have lost the last 3 games in a row and slumped to joint second bottom, and Gary Dicker's not been available for them. So he's played almost every minute up till then. And the issues at Kilmarnock obviously goes beyond just not having him. You know, there's issues with Alex Dyer and his ability to, I don't know, make chances and know when to make changes within a match. And there's also difficulties above him. I think you and I have been talking for, you know, what seems like years. I don't think the podcast has been going on for years, but it seems like since the start of it, they've been talking about the squad management and how this has been coming down the hill for them post Steve Clarke, even before Steve Clarke, that there was, you know, there are key deficiencies, key areas where they had to replace people, and they haven't. But Dicker is a big loss for them. So he's a big loss right now. He'll be a big loss when he moves on. He's 34 years old. And he really helps them, I think. So I would say, looking at Kilmarnock this season, their real issue is playing against organised teams and kind of chance creation against those teams. And Dicker gives them a bit of a platform to try and do that. So he's obviously really, really good in terms of defensive stuff. So he makes a lot of defensive kind of actions each match. I think it's 10 defensive duels a match that he's involved in, which is loads. He also wins a high percentage of his aerial challenges, which is really a high, you know, you wouldn't think that's important for a defensive midfielder, but in the Scottish Premiership it can be, you know, when things are launched off or when it's in transition and stuff. But also, when he does have to pass the ball forward, it's accurate to a good degree. He makes a lot of good tackles and interceptions. So I think that he's, Kilmarnock fans would not see him as underrated, but I think in Premiership terms, it's probably not recognised how critical he is to the success of that team. And they've been not great in a lot of other ways, but I think the thing I would say about Kilmarnock this season is that all the players have been okay-ish. They've just not been good, but without a key component like him, it all kind of can fall apart. And I think the next three matches they have are against Dundee United, Livingston and Motherwell, who are three of the four teams that are directly above them in the league. So it'll be really interesting to see if he's back. Does that help them change their fortunes? Because he's a really vital guy. You get any thoughts on him, or shall we move on to the next person?
Yeah, let's keep the ball rolling. I agree with what you say about Gary Dicker, and I think he's an important cog for Kilmarnock and that system. So, yeah, not really much to add. But let's go on to our next one. Who have you got?
Charlie Adam, right? So tell me what Charlie Adam, who has done really good things at Dundee, but tell me what he's done well for them.
So I think what Charlie Adams added to Dundee, and whilst there's definitely issues with this Dundee team, and Chris and Cammy, who do the Championship, you know, if you ever want to really hear some in-depth insight into Dundee and how they play, those guys cover, you know, every game that happens in the Championship week in, week out. But specifics for Charlie Adam, you know, he's vital to this Dundee team. If they are going to find a way to make the playoffs and, you know, try and get promoted, then he's going to be pivotal. His ability to progress the ball from deep, he makes, you know, lots of progressive runs where he's able to, you know, break the lines and use his technical ability. You know, whilst he's obviously older now, Charlie Adam has never been a player where it's been about pace. It's about that sort of football brain, football IQ, and the ability to see passes before they've sort of transpired as part of the play. He's making, you know, lots of through balls, you know, timing it to an absolute impeccable standard, way above the league average. So he's averaging a successful 1.88 through passes per 90 minutes, which is the best out of all defensive midfielders in League One just now. So I think the ability to transition that Dundee team very quickly and get them forward by making these sort of smart passes, smart runs, but also having the ability to, you know, create from corners, free kicks, being someone that the rest of the team can rely on in the sense of having the technical ability to sort of dig them out of the hole and adding goals and assists, you know, something that you can't ask for much more. He's on 4 goals for the season in the league. I think he's got another in the cup as well against Cove. So yeah, I think just the experience that Charlie Adam has to this Dundee team is one that's a positive. And we often speak about it on the pod about, you know, we'd prefer to see younger players getting the opportunity. But I think right now, Charlie Adam and the way that he's performing in the Scottish Championship says that, you know, if you find the right player with the right attributes who is coming down in their career, there's nothing wrong with adding that if you know what you're going to get from them. And I think that's what Charlie Adam gives Dundee.
He's the type of signing that you make to try and get you back up, right? So Dundee have got Queen of the South next and then Alloa to see this year out. And then they've got a big game against Hearts to try and turn the season around. I've got a wee kind of Charlie Adams story. So he's 35 a couple of weeks ago. This is from a few years ago. So I need to be clear that about that. I don't want him to get into trouble just now. But he was going out with a girl that I knew. She was a cheerleader for, I think, Glasgow Rocks, the basketball team. Anyway, she caught him cheating, and it ended up with her putting out like a statement on social media saying, and this is a quote, "Warning to young women all over, avoid a fat ginger with no teeth who thinks he can play football." So anyway, it turns out that at the age of 35 in the Scottish Championship, despite the thoughts of that girl and the terrible ageism that somebody, I don't know who, has shown on this podcast at times, he can play football. So respect to Charlie Adams. He's done really, really brilliantly. His stats are... if you look at a player profile for him, they're ridiculous. It's very, very well. Very, very good season that he's having for Dundee in terms of his statistical contribution. Who have we got next, though, Gavin?
Let's keep with our old guard and let's go to the club that we're both really excited about, Montrose. Talk to me a little about Paul Watson. What's impressed you about having this experienced head, and what does he add to the sort of younger talent round about him, you know, like Chris Mockery and all the Cammy Ballantynes that they've got?
Yeah, so all the Cammy Ballantynes. We'll come on to that, right? So Paul Watson is 35 as well, and he's been at Montrose for, I think, about 8 years, and obviously he's a kind of club legend now. He's featured in every league game for them this season. He came on at half-time for Harry Cochrane this weekend versus Dumbarton, which is, you know, a 35-year-old coming on for a 19-year-old. I wonder... whether or any other, what would there be a biggest age difference substitution than that in a season in the SPFL? Anyway, so Watson is not just there to add experience, though obviously that helps. So, in terms of what he will do for these players, well, it's just, you and I have talked often on this podcast about the benefits of, you know, investing your money in young people that have an upside and so on, but we don't want that to come across as us feeling that there's not an upside to having people like Watson there. Having that experience, particularly at a lower league level, you know, when this is, to an extent, at times a job, when it's difficult, where it's not glamorous, where, you know, you need that kind of person there with you to say, you know, in the dressing room, to kind of really get people focused, to have a mentality to think, you know, this match against Dumbarton, it means as much for somebody like Harry Cochrane or Chris Mockery as the games that they maybe see themselves playing in 5 years' time. It's, you know, it's invaluable. But as well as that side of things, Watson is adding a lot of stuff actually in the game. So he's getting the ball at the park for Montrose to a really good level. So he makes 1.14 deep completions per 90, which is really good. So he gets the ball into the dangerous areas of the park often. He's involved in a lot of passes generally for them. He's really involved in the game. He makes a hell of a lot of tackles for them, but it's the interceptions for me with him. He makes so many of those, and I don't know, there's something about interceptions that are just, they're the thing for me in terms of, you know, a midfielder in football. I just think that they show smarts, anticipating what somebody else is going to do, thinking about where the space is and where the opposition are and where to be, and kind of being able to, like, kind of, I don't know, the thing I love the most is where, you know, that, like, the defensive midfielder who intercepts the ball has sort of gone to the wrong spot deliberately to tease out the pass and then pounce on it. I just love it. It's just amazing, so smart, and you just see that. I just like it. But then it's not just about winning the ball back then, it's that the fact that that's so helpful, particularly in the kind of modern game, the transition, to then get that forward. And if you have somebody like Mockery ahead of you, where you think, if I can intercept this ball, maybe within the next 5 seconds, we'll have a chance on goal. And that genuinely happens for Montrose, you know. Watson could intercept the ball with a smart bit of thinking that all his experience that playing this level for 8 years has given him. But then he makes one pass, and then somebody else makes a pass, and then Mockery sets up a chance for somebody, and they're bang goal for Montrose like that. Just love it. So big credit to him. He's a big, it's really important to recognise that. I think, you know, the importance of having somebody like that doing those things at Montrose while people like Mochrie and Cochrane and Valentine get the kind of credit. So big shout to him. Yeah. But to move on to somebody else, let's move back up a couple of levels and talk about Jake Doyle Hayes. So he's at St Mirren. How important an addition was Doyle Hayes in terms of, for instance, replacing Kyle McGuinness, who's gone to Hibs from St Mirren?
Yeah, I think from a St Mirren perspective, the fan base was a little bit disillusioned with the sale of Kyle McGuinness very late in the day. Jake Doyle Hayes is someone who was at the Villa Academy, so I think someone who has got experience at playing with some good players and, you know, training at a high standard. Obviously, the toughness of being able to play in the EFL as well. So I think he was on loan at Stevenage. So I think, you know, from a St Mirren perspective, it's been a fantastic pickup. And whilst it's very limited minutes just now, you were speaking about interceptions there, but since Jake Doyle Hayes has came in, he's actually averaging 9.89 interceptions per 90 minutes. And I think that's a fucking incredible output from a midfielder, without putting it another way. And I know St Mirren probably have got the opportunity for the most interceptions with the way that they play, but you still have to have, as you said, that level of ability to execute the interception. It's not just a random act. There's a design and there's a technique to being able to do it. And I think Doyle Hayes has shown that capability. And I've seen, you know, randomly, before we decided we were going to speak about Doyle Hayes, there was a tweet from Jay Blaze Analytics on Twitter, one of the guys at Market I work with, and he tweeted out just today saying, "Nice to see Jake Doyle Hayes with another excellent composed performance for St Mirren. Have no idea how any EFL team didn't pick him up on a free this summer. Other than his size being an issue, in terms of foot on the ball, recycling possession and controlling the game, he's actually quite good." And I think, you know, Jay's watched a lot of EFL. For anyone that follows him will know that. And I think, Doyle Hayes has been a fantastic pickup and the sort of player that I actually feel that St Mirren could potentially run a profit off of. The way that he's performing, I think, you know, these destroyer-type defensive midfielders are very valuable. And with his profile of being, you know, a Villa Academy player and stuff, that I could easily see someone paid a couple hundred grand to take him out of St Mirren and back down to the EFL. So well done to the St Mirren recruitment team for trusting their process and getting Doyle Hayes in to replace Kyle McGuinness. Really happy with that one. And I think, we'll keep the ball rolling. You were just speaking about the importance of Paul Watson. And I mentioned about the multiple Cammy Ballantines at Montrose. So I'm going to put you on the spot now and allow you to speak about one of the Cammy Ballantines and keep it with Montrose. We do love a little bit of Montrose propaganda. So talk to me about how important Cammy Ballantyne's been for them. And also, you know, he's on loan from St Johnstone. Could you see him potentially, you know, coming into the St Johnstone midfield next season?
Yeah. One of the two Cammy Ballantyne's at St Johnstone. He starred every game for Montrose this season. He's 20 years old. He's on loan from St Johnstone, as Gavin said. And they've won the last three games in a row with him getting three assists within the last two games. And that's put them up to second now. And I think if you look at Ballantyne statistically, there's a hell of a lot of green here, which is a nice thing in terms of the profile we're looking at. And the things that he appears to be good at statistically are things like getting the ball forward. So things like deep completion, so getting the ball into the final third. Through balls, which are a huge thing for me, because through balls are damaging, but they also are not, you know, they're not just the ordinary pass. You know, they show to me thinking, smarts, you know, vision, control, composure, loads of things. Passes into the box, he's high up on. Touches in the box as well, he's high up on. Accuracy of his forward passes and his passes in the final third, those are all great. So really, really good signs from Cammy Ballantyne, both in terms of what me and Gavin have actually watched, but also in terms of what the stats, the data is showing about him overall. So yeah, I would suggest that looking at the detail for him, put him in for St Johnstone next season. Absolutely, he's definitely capable of being a squad player, potentially a starter in the Premiership. As we've maybe touched on before, I think Gavin and I probably think that for people who are showing up well in the top kind of half of League One, the gap between that and the bottom level of the Premiership is not really much at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that in terms of the gap, and I think Ballantyne will be someone that, much like Alan McCann, is loved by the St Johnstone fan base. I think you could see a really similar type thing here with how he performs and what he gives. So definitely a player to keep an eye on.
So moving on to our next player, that's Scott Brown. No, not Scott Brown of Celtic, although this is a Scott Brown who had a good weekend. This is Scott Brown of Peterhead, who scored the winning goal, the only goal of Peterhead's game against Partick Thistle. Scott Brown is a 26-year-old, obviously playing in League One for Peterhead. Would you, Gavin, consider him for a move up to the Championship? If you did, what would he bring?
Yeah, I think that Scott Brown would be an excellent addition to a number of Championship teams. I think he's got a good level of experience and minutes under his belt where you know what he's going to get. He's been scoring goals over the last couple of seasons in League One, and I think that, you know, having that player that sort of that peak age moment it can be valuable, especially when you're having mass turnover like we see at a number of Scottish Championship teams every season. So I think having that level of experience and that sort of player that you can add in is vital. But most importantly, Scott Brown's, he's got some really positive outputs, and you know, he's able to carry the ball forward, he's able to break the lines with some smart movement, he's able to, you know, really good close control and sort of tight areas and beat the sort of press and beat sort of tackles. And I think the other good thing, similar to, you know, the Scott Brown that we're used to in his prime, he puts in a lot of tackles and, you know, turns the ball over a lot. And I think for a team like Peterhead, that's vital. Not only are you turning the ball over with a successful tackle, you're actually able to do something with it when you have the ball. And the final thing that I would say, you know, in terms of promoting Scott Brown is he's able to get into the box and you know, he scored 8 goals last season, I think, for a midfielder, especially in the central area. That's a really good return. So I would definitely be happy if Scott Brown was a name that was on my target list going into, you know, the next season. But Owen, let's go to our next name and someone that we've covered on the podcast before. Regan Henry, we've been impressed with Dylan Tate and we spoke about him before, but what does Regan Henry actually bring?
Yeah, good player to talk about. Just briefly before we do though, Brown will be playing for Peterhead tomorrow, Tuesday if you're listening then, against Montrose, which should be a really good match. That'll be the last one for both of them for 2020. So good match to watch out for if you're interested in watching a little bit of League One. And I would completely agree with what you're saying, Gavin, that he's a kind of all-action type, ball-carrying shots, duels, tackles, passes. Regan Henry is a little bit more of a specific type of player, I guess you would say. So he's 22 years old, Celtic Academy product. He had a tough time out with injury, but has kind of bounced back from that to be a key part of how Raith Rovers play and how well they've adjusted to the Championship. I think he's kind of, I guess the first thing I'd want to say with Henry is that he's done really well and will go on to have a good career, but we need to kind of acknowledge the impact his injury had. But maybe he's a little bit of a cautionary tale for people who stay at Celtic or Rangers too long, that, you know, maybe, you know, for another player, they could maybe have had an exit earlier and could have made the next step on their career at this point. But anyway, in terms of this season, he's played every single minute for Raith Rovers so far. And he's just a great playmaker. The main thing that stands out for me is the through balls, you know, the passes into the final third, into the box that make chances or maybe lead after his pass to a chance with the next pass. He's a difference maker from deep. And I think if you have the right setup around him, he will get you really, really high quality chances. I absolutely love him. I think he's a lovely player to have, the type of footballer that most of us, I guess, probably go to games of football to watch. Mm. That level of vision, that level of kind of, you know, you can just see his mind you know, kind of splitting people and sending things in between them. It's beautiful. So yeah, a player to watch, lovely, and I hope he goes on to have a really spectacular second half to the season. Yeah, I guess let's stick with the Championship and talk about another midfielder, another young midfielder we were like from there. That's Roddy McGregor. So it's actually his birthday today. We're recording on Monday, the 21st of December. So happy birthday, Roddy McGregor. He's 19. He is a favourite of Chris Sampson from our Pure Championship show, who's been shouting about Roddy McGregor for a while. What have you seen from him this season, Gavin? Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, really, really impressed with this kid. 18-year-olds. Inverness, this Inverness team, first of all, hats off to them. They've done everything right. They've got young talent.
19 today, right?
Sorry, 19 today, sorry. They've done everything right. Contracts, you know, good length of contracts for young players. If someone comes in for them, they're not just going to lose them. So we spoke about Robbie Dees before. He's got a 3-year deal. Mm-hmm. McGregor's contracted until 2022. I think they've just conducted themselves in such a good way and are an example for a number of Scottish clubs and how they should operate, and giving minutes to these young talents is the way forward. McGregor looks very exciting. I'm going to go as far as saying he's the most exciting young player, so I'm going to say under 21 in the full of the Scottish Championship. His outputs are phenomenal in terms of what he's delivering. Again, really exciting in terms of carrying the ball forward, in terms of, you know, making those passes from deeper areas, making accurate and progressive passes from deeper areas as well, is something that's very valuable, being able to break the lines. He's not just doing that, he's actually able to follow it up by getting into the box and, you know, getting shots away, you know, plenty of touches in the box. You know, just real positives. He's aggressive, he's pressing his opponents, he's committed in terms of his defensive responsibility. I think he's a full, you know, tick in every box. And if I was someone like Hibs, Dundee United, Aberdeen, any one of these teams, and if you sell, for example, Shankland, Cosgrove, not to say that, you know, someone that's a valuable asset, Roddy McGregor would be someone that I would be saying, what do I have to pay to get him? I think that's the way that Scottish clubs should operate, and because especially with Brexit coming, this is your opportunity to start actually making some decent cash for your teams by making sure that your younger talents
build a squad of these guys.
Exactly,
absolutely, Gavin. Yep, and he's, you know, this is not necessarily left field. I mean, it feels like it is somewhat, but this is a guy that made his debut, senior debut for Inverness, you know, at a very, very young age, only turning 19 now, has been a key player for them for a little while. And I completely echo what you said. He scored a lovely goal versus Queen of the South earlier on this season. So much technique showing up in his finish. But it's his involvement, his calmness on the ball, his ability to pick a nice pass, and just all the kind of little things that stick out statistically. So I think he's got 2 dribbles a game, which is great for a midfielder. Loads of touches in the box, loads of deep completions. The accuracy of his passing in the final third is really good. Almost 2 shots a game for, you know, a midfielder, and they're not, you know, they're in good locations, many of them. So really, really like him. Very exciting player. I echo everything that Gavin said about him. He's the one, maybe, that, you know, if you were a Hibs or Motherwell, you know, I would be really looking at him if, you know, you've got that cash from Turnbull floating about and you maybe need something different in your midfield, which I think they do.
Before we wrap up, can I give you one final question on Roddy McGregor?
Yep.
Would you consider bringing him into the Scotland fold?
Under 19 or under 21?
Under 19. I think under 19.
I'd be very open to, yeah, I'm very open to thinking about people that are at, you know, I guess, you know, the balance here is that how much do you value senior minutes versus how much do you value people being at academy or kind of in the kind of knowledge sphere of the people that are making the choices? I would be very much open to valuing people that are playing senior competitive minutes and showing they can compete. So yeah, I would have people like that in and around it, absolutely, without a doubt. Yeah, looks like a good player.
Excellent. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's, for me, I think my view on the national team is that people that are playing regularly are the ones that you would want to be building your team around. So yeah, one to definitely keep an eye on, and I really would be surprised if he's at Inverness for too much longer. So yeah, that's been our bumper episodes tonight, and thank you for everyone that stuck with us. Maybe we'll be able to give you some basic timestamps on this, you know, to give people some ideas on where they, if they want to skip certain parts. But yeah, a bumper episode. A couple of things to finish up. First of all, at the top of the show, we said for everyone to make sure, you know, you take care of yourself during the difficult time that is lockdown. We'll definitely be here if you want to talk football, but make sure you use the resources that are available to support yourself. Secondly, have a great Christmas to everyone that's tuned in and subscribed and listened. You know, in a crazy year for all of us, you've made at least, you know, everyone the Pure Football team, you know, delighted and, you know, really happy that we can continue doing this with people downloading and listening and sharing and liking and commenting and all these things. It's truly incredible. And finally, this will be our last episode before Christmas, and just make sure that you have a really good one. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back soon. She went bad on me, y'all. Time passes by, I'm asking why. You match my fly, no cap, no lie. Trophy arm candy, but I'm better without it. It's a dub, my love, but I gotta reroute it. It's a lottery, it's loaded. Hope I can see all the motors before she make a fool out of me. I should know cause I'm older. Wasn't meant for me, fuck it, we ain't agree on no subject. We look good together when we was out in the public. You used to brighten my day, had me hype as a kid. First good morning, good night, now she leave me on red. I'm disappointed, it's different chicks who want it. Can't lie, for a minute, I was sick to my stomach. Stop, breathe, think, before you say the wrong thing. And I wish I could stay tonight, but I feel some type of way about. I've been staying up late, thinking about this day. And I wish I could stay tonight, but I feel some type of way. To the barbecue, that should show how much I fuck with you. I know I gotta make the choice, shit is overdue. I had to let you off, I might have to take the loss, I kinda like it when I'm